The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Today, El Clásico. Barcelona with one foot in the final and the other heavily bandaged after being breathed on by Pepe. The pot asks, OK, two stunners from Leo Messi, but was this the worst game of football ever? Should Jose calm down, dear? Or is that just what UEFA's secret cabal want us to think? Elsewhere, Man United also all but through after 2-0 win at Schalke. Next up for them, the big game at the Emirates. Who will come out worse, United's title hopes or Arsenal's water bottle? With big games up and down the Premier League, we preview all the weekend action that matters. Hear your posts and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Crikey, well, off we go then. It's been a special week of football, and it's a special week of Football Weekly podcast that we have in front of us. No less than five people on board today. Scott Murray.
Hello, James.
Hi, Scott. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And he's back. Rob Smythe.
Hello, James.
Lovely. Thanks for joining us.
He comes good at the end of the season. One
glory.
Team he might support or not.
Oof. Anyway, we'll talk more about whatever team that might be a bit later on. Right now, though, got to talk about that Clásico. It was almost like a Clásico directed by Pedro Almodóvar, wasn't it? Because he's full of hysterical people kind of having nervous breakdowns and flailing around in overdramatic fashion with the odd moment of artistic beauty in the middle of it.
I think this one was a Sam Peckinpah flick.
Really?
Yeah, massacre.
All right, then. Should we start off by asking, should both teams, in the light of day, feel just a little bit ashamed of themselves?
Probably. Their behaviour was pretty embarrassing. You asked in the intro, was the worst game of football ever played? I don't think so, but because it was lit up by two marvellous goals by Leo Messi, and there were some entertaining aspects. The big straw mesh at half-time was fantastically entertaining. But I've seen a lot worse games, many of them also involving teams managed by Jose Mourinho. One I think that springs to mind, possibly the worst game I've ever seen, was Porto against Celtic, was it? Some years ago in the UEFA Cup when Porto's players were diving. But you can have marvellously entertaining bad games. We were discussing earlier this morning Portugal v Holland in World Cup 2006, four red cards, but it was possibly the greatest game I've ever seen for sheer entertainment value. But last night's wasn't one of those.
Well, this one was deeply frustrating. You know, there are a lot of people posting and commenting on the fact that all that talent on the field and neither team for large parts of the game, but particularly Real Madrid singled out for this, seemed willing to actually go out there and try and play football. Happy Goth, Sim City tonight, and all we wanted was semi-final fantasy. Nick Greaves responds, I just pray for some sensible soccer. Nice, that. Guatam USA, on a slightly more serious note, I can't help but continue to be frustrated by Barcelona's striking unwillingness to rely on the team's actual skill. I've never seen such year-in, year-out team-wide effort to deceive the officials into giving bogus fouls at every possible opportunity. Really should use some punctuation there, Guatam USA. Scott, you did minute by minute. What's your take on this?
There wasn't really much to talk about until about 35, 40 minutes in when everyone started losing their tempers and losing the place, after which it was fantastic entertainment. I mean, it's very easy to be quite sanctimonious about it, I think. It was good fun. I mean, Mourinho's carry-on was just fantastic. when he got sent off, I mean, he's a man never to miss a photo opportunity. He was, he immediately put himself behind some metal bars, started passing out notes. It was a sort of small wonder that he didn't pass out a cake with a file in it, or anything like that. It was good fun. I mean, on the one hand, I guess it was egregious nonsense, but it was entertaining. Mm. And of course, Messi, pulled something out to keep everyone happy.
Yeah, he certainly did. Are there words for that goal?
It was an awesome goal, but he wouldn't have. I don't think he'd have scored it if they'd had 11 on the field.
Ah, right.
It was a brilliant goal, but by then the kind of.
Although, in fairness, there was five people around him. How many people do you want him to beat?
Six. I just don't think if Pepe had been on the field, he'd have scored it. I don't know. Oh, but by then, I'd got bored and was kind of switching back and forth to MasterChef, so I may have missed something of the goal.
After the spectacular effort from Leo Messi, of course, Jose Mourinho came up with something quite spectacular of his own after being locked in a room by UEFA to think about what he'd done for 10 minutes. he came out and let rip.
He wasn't locked in the room on his own. Both teams were locked in their dressing rooms for a cooling down period of 10 minutes, which clearly had a very strong effect on Mourinho. I shudder to think what he'd have said if he hadn't had the 10 minutes to cool down. But he came out and basically said that Barcelona get special treatment, that they're in UEFA's pocket or whatever. Or is it vice versa? Sorry, Rob.
No, he did. I have a bit of sympathy for Mourinho last night because I don't think it was a red card. But we shouldn't forget that Inter only got to the final because of a really bad decision in injury time last year. I think Bojan was penalised for handball and then scored and it wasn't handball. So while he has a point in the sense of Barcelona got lucky last night against Chelsea, he's kind of twisting it a bit.
I don't think they got lucky last night. I mean, really? There are three or four red cards that weren't given. So one of them might not be a clear cut, but if you continually do this kind of stuff and stamp on people that they did also in the Copa del Rey final and they weren't punished for that, you're going to get a red card. It's not coincidence that his teams always finish with man down.
It's funny. He also mentions a game at Stamford Bridge, a Champions League game in which there should have been loads of penalties that weren't given.
17, I think.
Yeah, he was talking about the Chelsea-Barcelona game. My mind went immediately to Chelsea's game with Inter, in which they were denied two clear penalties.
Oh, okay.
Against Jose Mourinho's Inter.
He's very good at obviously picking selective examples.
But the examples he does pick, like he's a big bee in his bonnet about the fact that the last five encounters his teams have had, whether it's Inter or Real with Barcelona, they've finished with 10 men. But the first one was Mata sent off for Inter. That's the famous one where Busquets peeked through his hands. So Mata was probably hard done by. But this season, two of the red cards that have been given to Inter came in the dying moments of the game and didn't really make a difference. One was for Sergio Ramos for a horrible lunge on Messi, which could have crippled him. And then the other was Albiol sent off after he hauled down David Villa. That was totally justified. And last night, which was borderline, I think it could have been given, could have not been given. But on the other hand, Adebayor should have been sent off last night and wasn't.
Hmm. They've got to you as well.
Yeah, clearly. Right. I am actually wearing a tinfoil hat, so they can't get to me.
I just think there's nothing morally wrong to be physical against Barcelona and to try to stop them playing. And even if it comes at the expense of the spectacle, that's not ultimately Mourinho's job. And I don't think he considers it his job to do justice to football. But as with anything you do on the pitch, you have a twin responsibility. One is towards your opponents not to injure them, and B is towards yourself and not overdoing it to the point of you getting sent off. And you have to get that balance right if you have that approach. And clearly Mourinho's teams just haven't got it right in the past.
All right, he came out and said that there was a plot and that he couldn't say what he really thought, otherwise he'd be suspended for the rest of his life. What are UEFA going to do to him, do you think, at this point?
Well, Barcelona are threatening to take legal action against him for what he said. He could get a suspension, they could fudge it and not do anything, I don't know. What I can't understand is why don't the referees take sterner action against these? There was one stage last night when Wolfgang Stark, the referee, gave a decision against Real, and he was immediately surrounded by 13 players. You know, and this was happening over and over again.
Just book them all.
Why doesn't he just get the yellow card out and book every single one of them, and then they won't do it again?
Promise the game might have to be abandoned because they'll both be finishing with less than 8 people. I think also Barcelona missed a trick last night because they could have stood up to this kind of game and just smiled at them every time they were fouled, and that would have enraged them even more, and they would have been able to just play their game, I think.
Because do you not think what they did was part of their game, that they were trying to get a player booked for?
No, absolutely, but I just think in terms of showing that they played the game better, I think being able to deal with fouls and being able to take a bit of this toughness without reacting, without over-exaggerating the effect, would have been a good thing for them. That would have been even more, I think, enraging for the opposition if every time you are getting fouled, you just get up and smile at the other guy.
Right. Well, that would be a very classy way to behave, and certainly a lot classier than a lot of their comportamento yesterday. What UEFA are going to do to him? What are Real Madrid going to do to Jose Mourinho? All interesting questions. Let's get Sid Lowe on the line now from what sounds like a building site in Madrid. Sid.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sid. Where are you?
I'm at home. It always sounds like a building site around here.
Does it? Everything well?
That's the sound of Spain, James.
All right. Oof.
Oh, and that's the sound of Estella.
All right, excellent. The Sid experience is well and truly on. Listen, Sid, the posters pretty much unanimously think that yesterday's performance was a bit of a disgrace from both teams, with the exception of one little Argentine fellow. What do the papers make of it in Spain?
Which papers would you like to start with? because as you can probably imagine, this is entirely dependent upon which side of the argument you're on.
But even the Catalan press must be a little bit embarrassed by some of the shameless
play. No, of course
played.
They're not. No. They're not because they see what Barcelona did as simply a product of Real Madrid's aggressive approach. They are, the Catalan papers are making the point, whether right or wrong, of course, is another issue. They're making the point that while it's true that Real Madrid were down to 10 men, they should have been down to 9, according to them. And I must say, in one of the cases, I think they're absolutely right. I thought Sergio Ramos' forearm smash on Messi was an absolute disgrace. And they're basically saying, well, what their players went down and made the most of things, but they didn't actually invent things. That's the insistence from the Catalan papers. The bottom line is they don't care at all, and nor indeed would the Madrid papers if the boot was on the other foot. So what we've got is a situation in which the Madrid papers are both asking, the two main sports ones that are pro-Real Madrid, are both asking the same question on the front cover, why, which of course is Jose Mourinho's question from the press conference.
Did they use a picture of a soldier kind of with his arms outspread and kind of falling... Shot from behind? Is it that one?
Not this time. I mean, the adaption of the second of May painting. It's not this time. And then the Catalan papers have taken advantage of Guardiola's talk the other day in the pre-match press conference, talking about Jose Mourinho being the puto amo, the man, the effing man. And they're using that to say, basically, well, the effing man is Leo Messi.
Interesting. What about the kind of middle ground press, like El País?
Yeah, well, but what's happened there is largely as you would expect, that they've talked a lot about the fact that this was pretty unedifying. They've talked a lot about the approach and the lack of football played. Largely, certainly El País, but then in truth, El País have lent this way most of the season. I think certainly Real Madrid fans believe that El País are a bit too clearly but pro-Barcelona. Now, I think what they've actually shown is a certain degree of critical rigour, but on occasions, I think they allow themselves almost to be... What's the word? Almost be too poetic about things, but certainly they believe that the game was a consequence of Mourinho's approach of a manager. They couldn't understand why a manager with that kind of team would play so defensively, would pass up the opportunity to have possession. And the stuff about Barcelona players making the most of it, that has been commented on quite a lot by quite a few people, but not as much as in England. Bear in mind, and we've talked about this before, there are different types of cheating. And in England, I think, generally speaking, we obsess ourselves with diving and stuff like that, and we don't worry ourselves maybe enough about players kicking people.
Do you think, obviously, Mourinho's laid the blame fairly at the secret cabal of Lizardmen at the heart of UEFA, Sid, but what do you think Real Madrid will be thinking? Will there be fingers pointed at Jose?
There will be a little bit. I think that there is certainly, and there has been quite a lot of the season, a certain degree of discomfort at some levels of Real Madrid with the kind of discourse that Mourinho has been putting forth all year. That said, also within Real Madrid, of course, as you can imagine, a lot of people share what he says. A lot of people think there is something going on. I'm not even sure if I should say they think there is something going on. They allow themselves to believe that there is something going on, that there's some kind of horrible plot against them. I think it's one of the least endearing qualities of a lot of institutions in Spain, politically as well as in football terms, is the utter failure to accept any kind of defeat and to always seek someone to blame. Then there's the other question: is to what extent do they think that Mourinho is in tune with a Real Madrid identity where you should go and attack teams or you should go for it. Now, Mourinho has enabled himself this year to get a lot more authority and a lot more support than other coaches have ever had. He has so much charisma that he's carried people with him. Winning the Copa del Rey, I think, wins people over, despite the semi-final. So I think within Real Madrid, he hasn't got major problems.
Sid, there was an interesting quote attributed to Ronaldo after the match, saying that he didn't enjoy playing for such a defensive team. Now, I'm not sure where that came from, but would that... A, what is the validity of that? And B, would that reflect sort of fault lines appearing inside the dressing room, perhaps?
I think in a way, amidst all of the many, many, many things that were said last night, I think this might actually be the most significant thing that was said. He said it in conversations in the mix zone, in a big pack of TV cameras where, you know, one of these situations where everyone's bashing each other over the head with TV cameras trying to get a quote. And he said... He was asked, for an attacking player like you, it must be, you know, what's it like playing in a game like this? Do you enjoy playing in such a defensive approach? And he said, no, I don't. He said, no, I don't, but we have rules, we have a strategy, we have a plan, and this is what we were trying to achieve, and I have to adapt to the team. Now, it wasn't a big rant, but it was interesting to hear him say that, and I think that goes together with a couple of moments in the game where you could see that he was frustrated. It does pose that question, which is, because you've got a player like Ronaldo, you've got Osil, you've got Di Maria, do you need to go quite so defensive? And Ronaldo, I think, certainly was very, very frustrated about that last night. Now, I would not at this stage go so far as to talk about divisions within a squad, certainly not between Ronaldo and Mourinho, who are pretty close. But I do think it's fair to talk about frustrations, yeah.
Jorge Valdano famously described Chelsea's play as a big turd on a stick, not using that exact word.
Jorge Valdano was talking about Chelsea and Liverpool in that semi-final, yeah. And he directly attacked Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho and attacked them because he said because they've never been footballers, they don't trust footballers and they don't want them to have any freedom or any expression.
And surely he can't be happy with what he saw last night in that regard.
He can't be happy, but Jose Mourinho doesn't give a turd on a stick. That's the bottom line here. Jorge Valdano, of course, as I think most people know, is the director general at Real Madrid. He, when Mourinho was presented as coach at the start of the season, he made a very public and, I thought, very embarrassing apology for having written that a few years ago and said, "Oh, me and Jose have sorted this out." But this year, behind the scenes, has been characterised to some extent by a constant battle for power between those two. Jorge Valdano has been manoeuvred almost entirely out of position now. Jose Mourinho has worked him out of the way. And I don't think Mourinho cares what Valdano thinks.
Sid, what do you think about Mourinho's post-match rant? I'm not talking so much about the UEFA thing, because that's almost a sort of a theme that he's rehashed over the years, but directly attacking the integrity of Guardiola and sort of implying that none of their achievements have been legitimate. Is that a new low even for Madrid-Barcelona relations?
I think it does take it further than it's gone before. There's a refusal to accept the basic fact, which is this is a sport, and in a sport you can lose sometimes, but you're not allowed to lose at certain clubs, and Madrid and Barcelona, of course, are amongst those clubs. Mourinho has done this consistently all year, both publicly and privately, tried to point out that Barcelona are not valid, that they have had cheating help all the way in many ways. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, why Guardiola reacted as he did in the pre-match press conference when he was so angry. Because basically, I think what's frustrating Barcelona's players and fans enormously, as much as anything else, is that sense of people consistently questioning what's been extraordinarily successful 3 years, or even if you take it back to the Rijkaard period, maybe 6 or 7 years at the club. So I think that really gets them. I think that's one of the things they're really upset about. That's one of the things that Guardiola was so annoyed about. Bear in mind, this comes in a context in a season in which Mourinho has complained, and with to some extent with the support of Real Madrid, complained about the fixture list. He's complained about the refereeing. There was even, now, whether this came from Mourinho or not, we don't know, but there was even that accusation that appeared in the media about Barcelona doping, which, of course, Barcelona reacted very, very strongly to, and Real Madrid claimed that it was nothing to do with them. But that idea, getting into the public mind, of consistently chipping away at the validity of what Barcelona do, and I think that is, of course, causing real problems in terms of the relationships between the two clubs.
All right, Sid. Well, listen, finally, next week, exactly, they're going to do it all over again. Casalom posting in saying, could the 2-0 scoreline arguably be the best result in El Clasico, as now Mourinho has to attack in the second leg? What's going to happen, Sid?
I'm loath to use this phrase, but sod it, let's use it. I think it's good for football that Real Madrid are forced to attack, because they're a very, very good team. Now, I, as I say, I would defend Mourinho's right to play any way that he wants. I really would, because he's up against the Barcelona side and he doesn't want to fall into their trap. He was beaten 5-0 by them earlier this season and criticised for having his team too high up the pitch. So now he defends in what he always describes as bloque bajo, bringing the whole block deep. I think now he will be forced to attack. I think they're a good side and that could make for a good game. But Mourinho says no, James. Mourinho says there's no point, he says, because what will happen is if we get the first goal and it looks like there might even be a tie and it's 2-1, they'll just kill us anyway. And he doesn't mean Barcelona. He means the dark, mysterious hand of the 12-foot lizard at UEFA.
Sid, do you think Mourinho actually knows that that what he's saying is nonsense and that he's making a bit of an idiot of himself and that, in fact, he's just playing to the gallery? He's being paid money by Real Madrid to stick up for Real Madrid. So he's not going to come out and say, well, you know, we can't beat Barcelona any other way than parking the bus. So he invents these ludicrous conspiracies, kind of takes on himself a bit.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, of course. And he would always argue that there's no point in us getting into a kind of moral debate about the way he approaches things. It's not a question of morality. It's a question of he works for his club. He wants that club to win. And he thinks that this helps. Now, the question mark is, does it really help? Are these mind games genuinely, do they genuinely have a role to play in the result? Now, for example, and I'll insist on something first. Yesterday's result, I'm absolutely convinced, has nothing to do with the press conference before the game. Nothing. But if Barcelona had lost yesterday, after Pep Guardiola was finally provoked into responding to Mourinho. I have no doubt that some people today would be saying Mourinho's a mind games master, he's made Guardiola lose it, Guardiola's fallen into the trap, and look, Barcelona have lost. Well, given that Barcelona have won, that discourse no longer stands up. Now, I think the argument really there is maybe it's not as significant as we think, but it is all part of the show. To what extent is Mourinho defending his clubs? To what extent is he defending himself? To what extent does he believe what he's saying? I think a lot of what he says he doesn't believe in.
Sid, magnificent. Magnificent stuff. I hope you enjoyed the game because there's more on the way. And we'll catch up with you on Monday.
Yep, OK, brilliant. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
Well, that's part one then. In part two, we'll be moving on to the rest of the wide world of football. Starting off with a comparatively quiet evening in Gelsenkirchen. Schalke, Man United. Right, 2-0. German reaction to that?
Pretty much the same as English reaction, saying this was a complete mismatch. Manuel Neuer was the only Schalke player who turned up on the night. Schalke out of their depth. Not aided and abetted by their manager's insistence on playing very open, stupidly offensive football with no holding midfield. Which really backfired. And of course, then individually also going through the team, I think five or six of them got the lowest mark possible by Bild because they were very nervous and didn't show anything. And of course, they met at United, which was recognised everywhere, and which a certain Munich-based broadsheet pointed out before, probably still underrated in England, but showed just how good they are.
Mm, they did look very, very good. Rob Smythe, you've seen Man United teams come and you've seen them go. How good do you rate this one now?
Well, I suppose we'll decide in a month's time, really. They'll be judged on what they win. They're nowhere near as good as the teams of 94 and 99, I would say. But you can't argue that I think the first team to potentially get to a European Cup final without conceding a goal away from home, which is extraordinary. They know their way around Europe now. This will be potentially three finals in four years.
It's not
years.
Potentially. They don't have any more away games before the
no,
final.
No, but they might not reach the final.
Oh, I see. Yeah, sorry.
Three finals in 4 years if they do, which is a first for an English side. Even Liverpool didn't manage that, I don't think. So, yeah, it's weird because, away from home in England, they've been terrible all season, really. They're just a hard team to fathom.
Are they going to have Manuel Neuer playing for them soon, Raphael?
No.
Because that's the big narrative the English press are trying to drum up at the moment. The Bayern deal is not something that's open to negotiation.
And the Bayern deal is very much open to negotiation because it's not struck yet with Schalke. But the deal with Neuer is.
Right.
And he was asked very pointedly in the post-match interview by German Sky, is there an offer from United or has there been an offer? And he just shook his head and then said, no, United were never an option for me.
Why would that be?
Because they were never an option.
Right, it wasn't from his point of view.
No, but the point is the fact that he used the past tense. Mm. He said it like somebody who'd already made a different decision rather than still weighing up Schalke, Bayern, maybe United, where am I going? He said it in a way that, no, when I made the decision, they weren't in the picture.
Right. Well, we've seen players change their minds before. Wayne Rooney, for example, who just today, or was it yesterday, in fact, was sheepishly saying how wrong I was, how wrong. What was that about, Rob?
Well, I think he had a valid point at the time.
Did he?
Yeah, they hadn't really invested, had they? I mean, at the time, he wasn't to know how good Hernandez and Smalling were. Just saw two.
He didn't have a valid point, then. He made a mistaken assumption.
I think he had a valid point, because the squad has been declining.
So why is his point not valid now?
Because, well, for a number of reasons. One, because the Premier League is so poor that United are the best team. One, because Hernandez and Smalling have turned out to be so much better than anyone could have envisaged. I mean,
except for the people who bought them.
Yeah, but you can't just say, oh, they knew all along. I mean, these are the same. They paid as much, they made more for Bebe than they did for Hernandez. You can't just say they knew all along. I think he had a valid point at the time. The team didn't look good. Chelsea were running away with the league, or so we thought. One, the key thing with Rooney is that since Hernandez came into the team, not just because Hernandez has improved the team, but he's changed the way Rooney plays. He's back playing where he likes. He's got movement ahead of him. And it's no coincidence that after 9 months of playing like a donkey, Rooney has now been exceptional since Hernandez became a regular starter.
But you're talking as if Rooney's decision was based in anything other than pound signs. Do you honestly believe that?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think Rooney's the kind of player who basically wants to win things. Of course he does. And he looked at a team that had won nothing last year, had started the season pretty badly, and thought,
Man City? You mean United, yeah. Sorry.
And thought, hang on, this team's finished, basically. Giggs and Scholes, Van der Sar are going. We've bought some unknown Mexican. That's maybe the way he thought. Clearly, money is a motivator for all footballers, but I do think he genuinely wants to win things.
It did sound like a Stratford line, though, something that he had fed, to justify the move towards the public and to also push a button with some United fans who might actually like you, not as a fan, but like you, agreeing with his assumption, saying, yeah, you know, I can see his point. He should move on.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I would agree with that up to a point. But I do think he's someone who genuinely values winning things more than say, I don't know, take someone like Gareth Barry as an example. I think Rooney is slightly different to him.
Well, he's certainly in position to win some important silverware this season, not only the Champions League final, but of course that six-point lead. Is it 6 points still, or has it gone up now?
Yeah, six.
Yeah, that six-point lead in the Premier League. Now, the good news about the 2-0 win at Gelsenkirchen on Tuesday was the fact that it takes some of the pressure off for the return leg, which means that it takes some of the pressure off for the very big game United have this weekend at the Emirates.
Yeah, it means you won't have to cut any corners, no need to consider Twitter's Darren Gibson or anything like that. He can probably just pick his best team and try to almost wrap up the league by winning. Whereas had he had Schalke, what would it be, Wednesday, then he would have had to probably juggle.
How dangerous is this fixture for United?
Just not dangerous at all.
Not dangerous at all, right. Okay. So we're saying that Arsenal basically pose no threat at this point to Man United.
Yeah, there's a fair body of evidence that's built up over the last few weeks
right.
that would suggest that's not the case.
Right.
I think in the post-match interview, he seemed to sort of suggest that he's playing for a draw and sees that the Chelsea game will be the game where they'll win the season.
What's interesting about the Arsenal game is he usually has very specific tactics for them, which is three in midfield, lots of runners. But because Hernandez and Rooney are playing so well, he might want to rip that up and play those. He did play them in the Cup game, but Rooney played as deep as he's probably ever played. So it'll be interesting to see, does Ferguson do his usual tactic, which is sit in and wait for Arsenal to beat themselves? Or does he actually think, well, they're really fragile, let's go at them from the start? I don't know what he'll do, but it'll be interesting to see.
Mm, this does rather dress up like the last shot at redemption for the Gunners this season, though. Even though it would mean nothing to them and to their season.
Hollow victory if they win. They've lost six of their last seven against United. And even if they win this one, I don't think it's going to happen.
They can be
major.
Dangerous. There was a game in 08 when Arsenal were pretty much out of the league. Then they were beaten at Liverpool in the European Cup in midweek. And they went to Old Trafford and everyone saying they're going to get stuffed. And they did lose 2-1. But for an hour, they completely outclassed United. They just suddenly, the weight of the pressure had gone from them. And they played fantastically.
But they lost.
Yeah, United equalised and they crumbled. But for an hour, they did play with just complete freedom because it was like a release that the pressure had gone.
Isn't this a chance as well for, I don't know whether Ferguson sees Arsenal as a threat anymore, just ever. But isn't this a chance for United to really, you know, stick the boot in while Arsenal are down and maybe, you know, jigger them mentally for next season as
it
well?
It is, but I don't think they'll do that. Ferguson tends not to. There was a game also at Liverpool last year when Liverpool were in a complete mess after the beach ball. They'd lost 5-6 or something. He could have gone for them. In fact, went there and played quite cagely and they got beaten. I think Torres and Ngoe scored. So I think Ferguson will probably just play his usual way, which is let Arsenal beat themselves. Well, that'll be the plan.
Were they to lose United, and it does seem unlikely, but were they to lose, it would become very interesting, that Man United-Chelsea game just a week after. Of course, Chelsea would have to win to keep it interesting at Old Trafford. They're at home to Spurs, who are chasing Man City for a top four finish. Been a while since they won a game, isn't it, Spurs?
Long time.
Well, it's been 21 years since they've won a game at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. Has it?
Yes,
when they last won, Nelson Mandela was 24 hours from release.
Wow, Rob. Do you just know that? Or
I like to keep up, you know, with world events.
Right, okay. That's astonishing. That's astonishing. Of course, they could get a draw. I remember watching a draw there from Spurs a couple of seasons.
Could or they could lose.
They could also lose. These are all options. Okay. let's have a look, shall we, at some of the other fixtures heading our way in this Premier League weekend. It's very interesting at the bottom, as ever, where you've got those five teams separated by just 3 points. Blackburn, Blackpool, Wigan, Wolves and West Ham. Any one of those teams could be bottom of the pile come Sunday evening, he said.
There's a big one between Birmingham and Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Yes.
At Sunday at noon, I think it is.
So that's a derby. Fits in with your schedule, if I recall correctly, Barry, doesn't it?
Does it?
Yeah, Sunday lunchtime games.
Oh, well, I'm actually going to be in Copenhagen, so I don't know what I'll be doing.
Can you explain why?
Just going for a weekend break to get out of this country for the royal wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, Copenhagen. Fun is heading your way. Hang on in there. Okay, well, Birmingham Wolves, that's midday on Sunday.
Sorry, what I meant to say before you rudely interrupted me with was that if Wolves won that, it would make things very interesting, even more interesting down the bottom, in fact, because they'd be out of the drop zone almost certainly and sort of dragging Birmingham back into the mire.
Right. Birmingham look like they might be out of it at the moment, but it would only take a defeat to make pulses quicken there. Blackburn, meantime, who haven't won now in 11 matches. They're at home to Bolton, but Bolton look like they've already started thinking about the summer holidays and their defeat 3-0 to Fulham yesterday. And Blackpool, who haven't won in 7 games, will be hosting Stoke, a Stoke team that's seen their end of season rather spoiled by that injury to Matthew Etherington. That's a bit of a blow, isn't it? He had a hamstring taken off in the game against Wolves on Tuesday night. Big win for Stoke. And he's out for the rest of the season. We'll miss the FA Cup final, almost certainly.
Wolves have actually come out and apologised for the behaviour of some of their fans who were chanting abuse at Etherington as he went off in that game. To the effect that, you're not going to Wembley.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, it's not. It's football fans. A lot of them are just scum.
Right. Hard to argue with that assessment. Wigan, meantime, are taking on Everton. And then you have that Man City West Ham clash. Dzeko is coming good, Raphael.
Yes.
Yeah, when it counts.
Taking a leaf from Torres' book.
Yeah.
It's still problematic for him because I think the way the City play doesn't really suit him. He needs really people to cross the ball quite a lot. He's quite an orthodox centre-forward who's happiest with some other guy doing a bit of running next to him or behind him. And City don't really play that way. So
this season they don't. Who do you think is going to be in charge of City next year? The Italians are convinced that Mancini won't be there, that he'll be
really?
Juventus, yeah.
I still think he'll be there if he finishes fourth. I don't think City want to start again building a whole new team again with a new manager every single year because they know they're not going to get ahead that way. And it looks as if they've got some semblance of success heading their way with finishing fourth. So I think it's very unlikely that he'll leave.
All right. It was a 3-1 win for City at Upton Park. West Ham, after a little return to form, haven't now won in 6 games. Bottom of the pile they are and possibly may remain so. That's it for part two. Woof, that one flew by. Part three, heading your way after this. Now, there are other Premier League games going on this weekend. Barry, you wanted to mention Liverpool-Newcastle, methinks.
Well, that's interesting just because it's Andy Carroll playing against his former team and his hometown team, the one he claims he didn't want to leave in January. And I noticed in today's Daily Mail that there was a huge, huge article revealing the sensational news that Andy Carroll drank a glass of beer in Madrid yesterday.
Yeah, Fabio Capello, I think, had asked him to dial his drinking down a bit.
Well, he's clearly flown in the face because it was at least half a pint in that glass.
Yeah.
And 4 days before a big game, who knows what kind of adverse effect
it
could have.
Nice pictures, though, weren't there? There was him, there was Tim Cahill, Pepe Reina, and they were all basically having a big football and lads out.
Glenn Johnson, yeah. They were over to watch the El Clasico.
Right.
So, it was kind of weird. Tim Cahill is obviously mates with them,
it weird for Everton players to be mates with Liverpool players?
I just don't know. I would imagine there's probably some hardcore fans who would not be happy to see players from both teams consorting. I could be completely wrong. I don't know. I thought it was quite nice. I'm sure Tim Cahill's a lovely guy.
Right. Seems. Were it not for the grotesque scenes of Andy Carroll's drink
yeah, well,
shame.
I mean, it was just debauched. Yeah. Sitting there at a, sipping from a glass.
And a pretty rum-looking T-shirt as well.
Is there any particular reason why we have these bizarre kickoff times this weekend?
Ah.
14:05, 16:10. What's that
about?
I would imagine it's to do with TV. Maybe the waiting for the EastEnders omnibus to finish
the weather or something. I don't know. It's probably the royal wedding. So much is being disrupted over the next day or two by that. Rob Smythe, wouldn't you say? Rob.
Is there a wedding tomorrow?
There is a wedding tomorrow, and you're live all over it, man.
Oh, James.
Yes, you are. Come on.
Is this your lowest professional ebb, Rob? You've had a few.
I've had a couple. Possibly. I have to cover everything else that's going on in the world apart from the royal wedding for 6 hours.
I thought you had to just dedicate yourself to the royal wedding.
No, on the contrary, everything other. So not only do I have to try to, write entertainingly about snooker and Murder, She Wrote, but also as a staunch royalist, I won't get to see the wedding. I mean, I'm pretty devastated.
I'm really devastated myself. I thought you said you were going to be covering the royal wedding for 6 hours with comedy tweets and minute-by-minute stylings.
No, even worse, covering everything else.
Oh, right, that's not too
with
much
no
fun,
comedy.
Who's doing the comedy on the royal wedding, then?
If I had my way, it would be Scott Murray, but I don't think that's...
Are you saying, Rob, that you're the one person in The Guardian who's not covering the royal wedding and you've to write about everything that happens in those 6 hours?
Excellent. Yeah, anyway,
I'm concerned.
Sunderland Fulham looks... I should say that Fulham looked terrific yesterday. I had the pleasure of watching them in action against Bolton, and Clint Dempsey was terrific, and I would say that his first goal was maybe not as good as Messi's second, but certainly... certainly one of the finest I've seen from Clint, and he scored some great goals in his time, hasn't he?
Is Clint, he's a redneck, or am I getting him?
He's Texan, which I don't know if strictly constitutes redneck territory, American.
Did he come from a trailer park,
well,
or am I
the,
thinking of
that was
of
the narrative
else?
That was initially peddled about him.
You're using the word narrative a lot today.
I am, aren't I?
Why?
I don't know. Sean Ingle lent it to me or something, I'm not sure. but he's also, and this is the other narrative about Clint Dempsey, he's also... the noted freestyle rapper.
Oh, God.
Yep, and he's released records on that with real rap people.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, and also happening this weekend, you've got the second city derby, West Brom against Aston Villa, and etc. Football League, some big games going on there. How about little Plymouth, eh? They might just survive. Their win against MK Dons, which was a real surprise loss at the start of the week, has meant that they're now only 3 points away from staying up in League One.
And they have a game in hand.
With a game in hand. However, we put this to James Dart, our top Plymouth expert earlier, Barry, and he said, yes, but that game in hand is against Southampton on Monday. So that's a huge game on Monday night. Huge. Anyway, they play Exeter on Saturday.
I think James Dart secretly wants Plymouth to get relegated because if they don't, he'd have to revise his opinion, his very low opinion on Peter Reid.
Right.
But he's not here to answer that. But no. I think you can vouch that that's kind of what he said.
That's kind of what he said. Why is Peter Reid not liked then? Because he's doing a... No, Robbie's doing a great job there at Plymouth. Do you know he's working unpaid? Well, he even paid some of the electricity bill himself.
I did once write a piece in defence of his management. Yeah. But just every time I think of him, I think of the fact that once when he ran out of mixer, he got hammered on vodka and Listerine. And I just, every time I think of Peter Reid, I think of that. It's true.
What sort of Listerine was it? Like a sort of minty fresh Listerine?
If it was the purple one,
the full on TCP flavour.
You're not supposed to drink mouthwash, though. No, they're quite specific about that on the label.
It's must.
The time has called for desperate measures, literally.
Let's have a post or two, shall we? Since we seem to have reached the end of the show. Ars Technica says, whatever happened to El Clasico, it was a night filled with fireworks in Ligue 1. Marseille put 4 past Nice. Nice answered with 2 goals of their own. But all the Marseille goals, what was particular about them? Anyone?
Headers.
Nope. They were all scored by the AU brothers. Interesting. Or not.
Yeah.
All right, then. Okay, and Ars Technica again. Well done, Ars Technica. While everyone's been obsessing about Lionel Messi doing it on a cold Wednesday night in Stoke, we miss the fact that even Stoke are hampered by those cold nights. It's springtime and they have become a regular goal-scoring menace. Look at this, 4-0 against Newcastle, 5-0 against Bolton, and 3-0 against Wolves. The world's gone mad, upside down, crazy.
Can't talk about West Brom, Aston Villa?
All right, then. Away you go, Barry. What about in the Bundesliga, Rafa?
Bundesliga is big because Dortmund could wrap up the title.
All right, that's excellent news. Milan could wrap up the title. I think they're playing... who are they playing? Cesena? No, but they're playing Bologna, aren't they? Well, that is what awaits. Exciting lineup it is of matches. Of course, speaking of matches, a final thought for Will and Kate's, or is it Wills and Kate? I'm not sure.
I think it's William and Catherine to
all
you.
All right. I think it's your Royal Highnesses to me, actually.
Or not me, though.
Not to you, Barry.
Or Raphael.
There.
No. Although...
Technically, they're his more royal family more than they're ours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We outsourced them.
You're not going to be stumbling around Copenhagen in your Union Jack bowler hat, Pat?
I don't have a Union Jack bowler hat.
When are you leaving, Barry?
Tomorrow morning.
Oh.
So if any of our...
The airport will be deserted, you know.
Oh, great. Brilliant.
Right.
You could buy a Union Jack bowler hat at the airport.
Right.
I don't
the
want...
The airport would be chocker because it's holiday
No, I was
on
being
Monday.
Sarcastic.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm German.
I thought he was being serious as well.
Anyway, that, though, in the meantime, is it for Football Weekly Extra. So it's many thanks to Raphael Honningstein, Barry Glendening. Enjoy your trip, Barry. Scott Murray. And enjoy the rest of the world, Rob Smythe. And thanks as well, guest producer, Pascal. We'll be back on Monday. Do join us then and have a super weekend in the meantime.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.